Well, hello and welcome to episode 4 of Negotiate, Influence, Achieve, a podcast series that offers you tips, ideas, and new perspectives in your pursuit of negotiation and communication excellence. My name is Simon Dowling, and I'm coming to you from the studios of CMA Learning Group, a negotiation and communication skills consulting firm in Melbourne, Australia. Well, in today's episode, we're talking about culture in communication, cross-cultural communication, and I'm chatting with Elaine Lynn, who at the date we're recording is one of the CMA team, but who is returning to the US imminently. Hello, Elaine, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Simon. Thanks so much for having me.
Quick story, Elaine. You joined us in October last year, 2010, for a 12-month stint working here at CMA in Melbourne as a senior consultant and coach. Tell us a little bit about where you came from, what brought you here, and why.
Yeah. Well, my background is in law in the States, and during law school, having taken a negotiation workshop course and realizing for probably the first time in my life that there was actually a way to talk about differences that didn't necessarily mean the end of the relationship or that everything would blow up in your face. And that was a huge moment for me to learn that there is a way to do it. And so from there, kind of jumped into the world of negotiation and mediation, facilitation, everything in alternative dispute resolution that I could get my hands on, realizing at some level that this was what I had done my entire life. I just didn't know what it was called.
Yeah.
And then the opportunity, well, I guess the short story is, you know, started working at the Harvard Negotiation Institute and working with groups within the United States and a bit in Europe, around developing these skills capacities. And when CMA got in touch and said they were looking for someone to come over, I guess we emailed, we interviewed by Skype, and I hopped on a plane is the short story.
We did. And you were here pronto before we knew it. And yeah. The sad part is that your time here has gone pronto as well.
That is true.
But great to have the chance to sit down at a microphone, as it were, and have a bit of a chat today about cross-cultural communication. Mm. And really, I think, where did this topic come from and why are we talking on this today? I think both you and I have observed that this is something that crops up quite a bit in workshops that we run, people asking about, well, what effect does culture have on communication, negotiation, resolving conflict? Mm-hmm. And clients are asking this increasingly, so we're noticing it to be a key issue. Mm-hmm. I'm imagining a number of our listeners out there might well be wondering how it works in their world and what can they do to better manage cross-culture. And I'm also thinking that what better case study to start with than you, because it wasn't all that long ago that you were coming to Australia for the first time, yeah?
Right.
From the US.
That is true. So Australia is probably the last place on my list of places to go. Just because I...
You've won a lot of lovers out there.
That's true, right? This is an Australian audience. But, you know, I made the assumption that if I'm going to travel in the world, I want to see places that are different.
Yeah.
And a huge generalization on my part of, you know, of all the places in the world, Australian culture and American culture is probably... Again, an assumption that I made at the time, probably pretty similar.
Yeah.
English speaking, first world, Western, how different can it be?
What did you notice?
We aren't actually the same country.
What really struck you? Come on, you can talk honestly.
We don't actually speak the same language. Honestly, I thought that we spoke the same language.
Yeah.
Until... actually, the first week in this office, when Simon was walking past, you were walking past, and I wanted to ask you a question, and I asked you, Simon, can I snag you for a minute? And you burst out laughing and were very kind about it and explained that snag in Australia is a sausage. And as I relayed this story to other people in the office, they explained some of the other possible definitions of snag. So lesson for me, you know, don't say that to your boss.
With apologies to all the sensitive New Age guys out there listening today. Yeah, and I think that's kind of you to use that example, because I know that we then had and still have today a number of situations where I use expressions in terms of phrase that I think are pretty normal.
That's true.
You know, just talking earlier this morning about something being a beat up, and you thought I was going to physically assault you.
Yeah, and Simon, let's get on the blower.
I love how you said that with an Australian accent too.
It's true. I've been working on it.
So language was sort of turns of phrase was one of the key things. And I suppose when we think of cross culture, it's language is always going to be a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that sort of impacted you from a cross cultural point of view?
Well, you know, having in preparing to come here, my father was very kind and bought me a book that said, "Here's the American's Guide to Survival in Australia."
I want to see that before you go.
Happy to bring it in. And it starts to lay out the groundwork, give you the lay of the land as to what you're supposed to think, because, of course, all of Australian culture and all Aussie people can be summed up in a book. or they try. And this idea that, you know, is it the tall poppy syndrome?
Yeah.
Be careful. Well, maybe you should be explaining this to me.
Well, the tall poppy syndrome is really, I guess it's a phenomenon that we talk about,
mm-hmm.
which I think, yeah, we often do think of as particular to Australian culture, which mm-hmm. is where we you know, generally, historically, haven't liked people who stand too far out from the rest of the crowd.
Right.
And I don't think we talk about that in fond terms. That's something that we're just aware has happened. And so people either get cut down when they do stick their neck out too far, or they don't stick their neck out because they're worried about the consequences.
Right.
I think that's what tall poppy syndrome describes. Yeah. So strange for you to think of that as a culture?
Well, no, to think, okay, then if this is the way things are, quote unquote, then how should I adapt the way I behave so that I don't offend anyone,
mm-hmm.
so that I get my message across in the right way, so that when I'm working with clients, you know, they don't see me as just not getting people on their backside,
mm-hmm.
their back up. This is my lame attempt to try and adapt Aussie slang
like
into
a
my
live
language.
Case study here to get their back up. Right.
Yeah.
So were you conscious of doing that when you came here to, you know, make sure you didn't fall into the trap of being a tall poppy if that's in fact what was going to be an issue here?
Yeah, I think if someone tells you, you know, you should really watch out because people aren't receptive to this, given a general stereotype or assumption about a culture, you take that into account.
And I suppose that moment when you're coming to a strange country for 12 months, you're getting on a plane, there's a whole rigmarole around it, you're being given farewell gifts, one of which is this book. There's a much more ceremonial aspect to I'm changing cultures for a period, and I, you know, I'm more conscious of wanting to change my context.
I actually probably went the other way, which is I didn't think about it enough.
Oh.
And was surprised when I came here of, and I guess this also comes to what is culture?
Yeah.
Right, because we easily talk about it in terms of cross borders, Australia, America, but even just within organizations or departments or fields of business, coming from the large law firm culture, and then to come here to Australia and realize, okay, not everyone is working 90-hour weeks and on call by BlackBerry with an expectation of a 30-minute response time,
mm-hmm.
which is the, quote, culture that I was used to.
Right.
So then to think, whoa, life seems slower here.
Right.
Based on what I know and based on the assumptions I've made about what it means to be a business professional. So all of this starts to go into the mix. And because I wasn't expecting it to be all that different, kind of caught me off guard.
So that's, I think this is really interesting. So can we go a bit deeper into this thing of what is culture?
Mm-hmm.
When people do ask us about cross-cultural
mm-hmm.
communication and negotiation and so forth, what are we talking about? Like, what is culture? So we've touched on the cross countries, the mm-hmm. cross borders culture, and as you've now started to touch on, is, you know what, it goes much wider than that. We're talking mm-hmm. about different organisations.
Yeah,
we could be talking about different upbringings.
Yeah,
I mean the family that lives in the house next door to us in the street mm-hmm. might have a very different way of operating and a different way of prioritizing and have different expectations of one another. That's got nothing to do with where they were born. It's got nothing to do with where they work. It's got to do with the way their family has behaved over a passage of time, which you might say is where they were born.
Right.
So it's what they've grown up with, grown up in.
What we believe to be normal or right, which then starts to reflect in the way that we behave. And I love the story that a client of ours once told us, which was actually we were talking about cross-cultural negotiation. We were talking about this exact issue of family upbringing. And she was saying, you know, with her husband, their whole family just yells at each other all the time.
Yeah, right.
And it's not because they hate each other or because they're upset. Loud volume just means passion. Yeah. And I care about you, so I'm going to be really engaged with you.
Yeah.
And for her, it puts her on the back foot. And she's thinking, don't yell at me.
You what know, have I done wrong?
I haven't done anything wrong. And her mother-in-law is just saying, honey, I love you. And if I didn't, I wouldn't be so, you know, I wouldn't be having this conversation and it wouldn't be at X decibel, right? It's because I care so much about you that I am talking at this loud, you know, at this volume. And she's just, I can't deal with that.
I wish people could see your hands.
I can't think when you are engaging with me in that way.
Right. Because it's foreign to them.
Absolutely.
Distracted by it.
Absolutely. And it's not right. Because I was taught, you know, you speak in a calm, thoughtful way. You never get loud. To me, my assumption is loud equals angry.
Right? And that then brings us to why we're talking about this, or why clients, participants bring this up with us, is because they're saying, either how do I better interpret signals I get from other people? You know, when I see someone talking with their hands flailing all over the place, or raising their voice, or thumping the table, is that down to a cross-cultural issue? Is that a cultural question? And if so, what do I do about it?
I was going to say, I love that you've even raised that question, because the question I normally get is, I don't understand them.
Yeah.
What's wrong with them?
Yeah, you're right. I'm interpreting the normal question.
No, it's just, this is so frustrating. I can't understand them. My favorite is when we were working with one of our multinational clients, and they said, you know what? I can't understand the Indian engineers, you know, who are on the other end of the phone.
Right.
And then the next week we were working with those Indian engineers who said, we can't understand those Aussies who are on the other end of the phone.
Okay.
And both people are frustrated.
Mm.
Both people are saying, this is ineffective, inefficient. What do we do?
So this is why it matters. This is why people ask, because they find themselves stuck in difficult situations or challenging, confronting situations. And the reason they're often asking is because they're saying, I've got a problem, and the problem is because of culture.
Yes.
How do I fix that?
Yes. So let's slap the label of culture on it.
Yeah.
And this is frustrating. And by nature of the fact that we now live in a global world, it is essential to be able to communicate, quote, cross cultures.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So, and this is what's, in a sense, frustrating about this whole space, is that really, if we say culture, the things that go on that we put down to culture are really just the assumptions we're making about what's normal, and the assumptions we make when we interpret someone else's behaviour.
Right.
If they're taking a really tough stance in a negotiation, for example, what assumptions do I make about why they're doing that?
Yeah.
And it's easy, I'd go so far as to say lazy, to say it's because of where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it might be a reason, but surely it can't be the only reason. And surely whatever reason you give cannot apply to everybody in your example who is an Indian engineer.
Right.
I mean, that just beggars belief. That's an insane proposition.
Mm.
Or is that just me talking? Do people think of it as insane? I wonder what.
And if I can jump in on that, I think absolutely it matters.
Mm-hmm.
It's the question of to what extent and of what impact. And probably, my sense would be, we probably, it's an easy label to go to. That's a cross-cultural issue. But then we start to unpack, what is culture?
Mm-hmm.
If it's just a set of assumptions, okay, what do we do about that?
Mm-hmm.
How do we understand it? Culture, what is culture? If that's a set of assumptions and we can get some kind of guideposts based on experiences and observations, those can be helpful, but at some level to be tentative about it, right? Because one Australian or one American, or for me, being a Taiwan-born Chinese-American, whatever that might mean.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a definition for that?
Well, this was interesting because I had always identified as Chinese, even though I was born in Taiwan, and then people would say, well, why do you identify as Chinese? Well, because I always thought of myself that way. Right. Well, aren't you Taiwanese? Well, I was born there. Does that make me... what does it mean to be Taiwanese?
Yeah.
Okay, then I'm living in Beijing, and people, when they look at me, see that I'm Chinese, but I act sometimes in a way that they perceive as Western.
Mm.
So then, you know, where are you from? You know, I used to ask, I had great fun with this. People would say, where are you from? And I said, where do you think I'm from? And they'd say Japanese, Korea, Singapore. I even got Russian. And I thought, oh, that's a new one. What does that mean? But what does it mean? And it was when I was living in China that I realized I'm not actually Chinese. I'm Chinese-American.
Right.
Because of the different assumptions I have about the way that we operate, different values that I hold that would be very, quote, American. And then you also wonder, you know, the Chinese definition that I have, whatever that is very different than mainland China now.
Mm.
Because it is a version of, quote, China or Chinese culture that was instilled in me by my parents pre-1948-49, then transported to the States. So you're balancing between these worlds, wondering, how does this all work? Because there are things that I know are relevant. The stereotypes at some level exist for a reason, because they're drawn from data, but they can't be the be-all, end-all.
Mm.
It's much more complicated than that. And can we be curious about, okay, I'm observing something and I'm attributing it to culture, but what does culture mean?
Mm.
What of it is true and what is not true?
Mm. Yeah, I like your point that stereotypes are there because they're kind of, they're observations that have accrued over time and lead to some conclusions. But stereotypes have to be just that, stereotypes.
Yeah.
And I'm reminded of when, you know, when we give advice for any difficult conversation, forget about culture for a second, one of the most important pieces of advice is to be very wary of what assumptions you make about the other person, particularly when you're trying to explain or rationalize why they're behaving in a particular way.
Mm.
And I think we as human beings, with all of our frailties, are very good at describing away other people's behaviours based on their nature or their disposition.
Sure.
So I point to you and I say the reason you're doing that is clearly because you're lazy or you...
You're just an idiot.
You're an idiot,
Let's be honest here. Come on.
Sorry, you talking...
No. Good clarification there.
Thank you. So come to culture now, very easy to do exactly the same thing. Oh, well, they're doing that. They're being unhelpful because they are... Russian, because they are Indian, because they're Australian, because they're American.
Because they're an engineer.
Because they're an engineer, because they work for X company.
Yeah.
Because they're male, because they're female, because they're Gen X, because they're Gen Y. I mean, the list could go on.
Yeah. And Gen Y, apparently, word on the street is that they're lazy.
Is it?
Yeah. Just the assumption. And this is repeating back what we've heard from other people. Within an organization, it is so hard for me to work with a Gen Y person because they just don't understand the value of hard work.
You do hear that a lot.
Yeah.
And I had a conversation yesterday with someone who 90% of their conversation was about putting people into two camps, male and female.
Mm.
And the view of the world about why male and females are different was extraordinary. But there you go.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of assumptions. So the advice that we give people, I often say to people in difficult conversations, is take off your demonizing goggles.
Mm.
In other words, don't wear those goggles that just instantly and lazily start to explain other people's behaviors in ways that are far less kind than you would be if you were describing your own behaviors.
Right. And that's the other point of what assumptions am I making myself, which then inform the way that I see the world.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So checking for myself, and a bit of this is self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Right. For me, I wasn't aware of what assumptions I was making about being Chinese or being female or being a professional until I was taken out of a context and put in another one that challenged that.
Mm.
So a first question I'm asking is, what assumptions am I making about the way things should be?
Right.
And so, therefore, when I see something very different, is that why I'm upset or frustrated? Because it's not the way I anticipated it would be.
Right.
But have I even communicated what my expectations are? Similarly, the other person's having the same sort of conversation.
Yeah. Look, I think that becomes a really important piece of advice, in my view, is to be able to talk about expectations and to talk about process.
Mm.
How we, particularly in a business context... Yeah. It makes good sense in a business context to talk about how we do business and how things should unfold. If I can as one of our clients was telling me about a couple of months ago, they engaged a consultant to help them to understand the cultural differences between here and where they were doing business, which is Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
Engaging that consultant is one thing, but the risk is you get fed a whole bunch of stereotypes.
Yeah.
And this consultant is able to say, well, here's what I understand about Australians, here's what I understand about Malays and Malaysians, mm-hmm. and this is now what I advise you.
Mm-hmm.
Next step is, and this is where we were working with this client, was to say, well, how are you now going to structure a conversation with your business counterpart that talks about process and how things should unfold? And to be able to very explicitly say, well, look, this is where we've got to at this point, or what we thought we would do is start by explaining our needs and particular drivers in terms of why we're doing business, and then give you an opportunity to feedback to us to what extent that resonates with you and you understand it. Are you comfortable with that process, or would you normally prefer to do things differently? And that question's got nothing to do with their ethnicity. That's just to do with preferences.
Right. And I think as important as process is, it's also being transparent about the intention of why you're having that conversation, right? Why you're even setting up a process. Essentially, we're having this conversation because we want to be ensure that we get maximum value or maximum efficiency out of the deal or the conversation. So I'm intent on finding a way to work that works for both of us. Our thought was we'd proceed in this way because, you know, this is the way we normally operate and we found, or best practice for us has been, but also to be open to persuasion of, you know, we're happy to consider something else. What are your preferences, right? How would we go about it? For the purpose of we want to be able to work together well.
Yeah.
And framing it, being clear about that intention.
Yeah, it's a heightened acknowledgement of the fact that we could have different preferences on things generally. And that piece of advice, though, should hold true when you do business with someone from another company in your own home city. There's no reason why you wouldn't have that same conversation.
Well, that's exactly it. If the operating assumption from my end is I'm here to reach a fair and equitable outcome, and actually that's not at all why you're here, then we should be clear about that. Because if I'm working really, really hard to try and come to that, what I consider fair and equitable, and we'd have to negotiate and debate what fair and equitable actually means, but you're actually just here to try to screw me over or to try to get the best deal, and you actually have no regard for the impact on me, I'd want to know that. It would be a different conversation.
They're not going to tell you that, though, are they?
Yeah, but I'm gonna try my darndest to figure it out. Right? Or I wonder if there's a skillful way of asking that. Why are you here? What are you hoping to achieve?
Yeah, maybe reflecting back. Look, as we're at the pointy end of this deal, I guess I'm struggling to see what it is that's keeping you at the table and why it is that we might continue these conversations. And I ask you with genuine curiosity, help me understand why we're still having this conversation about price when I'm also getting a message from you that you're quite happy to not do business at all. Can you help me understand that? So it's a curious question that continues to try to understand people rather than to write them off.
Yeah.
You don't look so sure about that.
No, I'm just thinking, I think the danger here generally with culture is that it's an easy, let's write it off.
Yeah.
Right, and rather than trying to understand what's at play and the complexities that are at play, just to use that as a label. But as we've discussed in this, you know, brief 20 minutes or so, we are all adopting multiple cultures, right? It's not just ethnicity. It's not just where we were born. It's not just the company we work for, the organization that we work for. It's not our gender. It's not our age.
Yeah.
It's all of those things together.
Yeah.
And so at some level, that's good news.
Yep.
Because it's not just, let me go negotiate with a Chinese person, and what does that mean, and let me read a book that tells me what that should mean. But I'm negotiating with a unique individual who has different preferences based on the things that have informed their life experience.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to figure out this person or this team.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll put that to the test a little bit. I'll put you on the spot on this.
Oh, dear.
I don't know what this is going to lead to. But if I came up to you as a complete stranger, well, not a stranger, but a participant in a workshop, and they said, oh, so you were born in Taiwan.
Mm.
How long did you live there for?
Mm-hmm.
Then the next question might be, I'm about to go and try and do some business in Taiwan. Mm. Can you give me some tips? I'm doing business in Taiwan. What should I watch out for? What should I be aware of?
Mm.
What does Elaine Lin say at that point? Do you have some?
I think it would probably be the same advice to the extent we've been putting any out there of check your assumptions. Be clear about your intention.
Mm.
Check your assumptions. Observe. Be curious. What do you see at play? And check that as well.
But I'm still going to say to you, but come on, you know, as someone from Taiwan,
mm-hmm.
there must be some things about the Taiwanese people that you would identify as sort of a collective norm.
Sure.
A social norm. Would you be prepared to offer up those?
To be a good lawyer, I'd have to put my caveat out there, which is I was born in Taiwan and I moved to the States after 10 months.
Yep. So limited experience of that.
Let's put that there. And then I might ask you, who are you talking to?
Mm-hmm.
In what context? In what mm-hmm. industry?
Mm-hmm.
At what level of seniority? What intel do you have?
Yep.
Because we then might be able to put out some of those guideposts that we normally do, observations,
yeah,
and then couch that in saying,
mm.
you know, but take that for what it's worth.
Yeah. So you're very deliberately being a bit cautious about at what point do I start making any observations
mm.
or do I make assumptions that just because you want to know, you know, how to do business in Taiwan,
mm.
that you're suddenly able to give meaningful advice to me about what sort of people I'm likely to meet and how they're likely to behave and think.
That's probably too big a responsibility for me to take on.
Yeah, right.
I know that the desire is for a quick and easy answer.
Yeah.
And I don't think there is one. I'd be curious to hear it.
Mm. That's what the risk is here, because people hang on to, and this is why I ask you the question. That's why I put you on the spot, because mm. I think that's the kind of the appetite.
Mm-hmm.
People want to know, quick and smart,
absolutely.
What is it I need to know? And you hear common observations around, you know, how an Asian population or an Asian culture is typically different from a Western.
Yeah.
And people love hooking onto those things.
Mm.
But if you're hearing them, big advice, be really careful.
Yeah.
Be careful that you don't then use it to start to pre-interpret behaviours
yeah.
and make assumptions about differences that may be happening.
Mm-hmm.
Culture might be a possible explanation,
mm-hmm.
but it may not be
mm-hmm.
the explanation. So
whatever culture is and which cultures you're talking about. Again, just to complexify.
Yeah.
I think there are probably some tangible takeaways.
Okay, let's summarise this.
Which would be, let's be aware of what assumptions we're making.
Mm-hmm.
Let's check those assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be explicit about what intentions we do have.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that we experience something, to know that that's just the impact on us.
Mm-hmm.
And we, again, should clarify there
mm-hmm.
what was actually meant
yep.
rather than assuming. At some level, right, if cultures are about differences and identification because of differences, then it's how can I understand? Right. I'm trying to understand where you're coming from. I'm trying to understand what you mean. And I hope that I also help you understand what I am meaning or trying to do or intend.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's hard, but not impossible.
It would be really interesting to hear some feedback from listeners on this and just spark this conversation.
Absolutely.
And for those of you listening, thank you for being a listener on this podcast. This is episode 4. We've got two ways you can participate, feedback on this episode. One is by sending us an email. And we've got an email address, podcast@cmalearning.com.au. So podcast@cmalearning.com.au. We'll put that in the show notes. And the other thing is you can link to us, become a friend of us on Facebook, our Facebook page, facebook.com/CMA Learning, and you can obviously make comments on the episode as it goes up. We'd invite people to do both of those things, and you can obviously get this podcast from our website, but also on iTunes, where you can also leave comments. So we'd very much welcome and spark that kind of conversation and debate, and perhaps there'll be a future opportunity for us to pick up on it and and acknowledge and talk about some of the comments that come from our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Elaine, this has been fun. Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Be good to check back on it after you're back in America and talk about, okay, what now? What are you missing about Australians?
The good humour.
Yeah. Well, look, thanks very much for listening, guys. This has been episode 4. Stay tuned for episode 5. In the meantime, all the best in your negotiations.